So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Way.
Triple H is bringing that weapon, that sledgehammer, into the ring. Something's going to have to be done now.
No! 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 No!
The referee is saying no. It's a no avail. What the devil with a sledgehammer. Triple H is using that weapon. One thing, if there is ever a rematch between these two, I think we know who's going to be favored.
It's Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. Wei, how are you?
Good.
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, how are you, man?
I'm doing great.
Refreshed?
Yep. Refreshed from 3 hours of Raw Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Batista's back.
Yeah.
Brock was on the show. Dayton, Ohio, which was also the site of Bret Hart's return in 2010.
Oh, what a bunch of connections.
Yeah.
Okay. And how are you doing? How was your? Are you more refreshed now from your vacation than you were
on Monday night?
Yeah.
I'm about the same. I'm acclimated with the Eastern time zone.
You still retained your tan, I see.
Do I have a tan?
Yeah, definitely.
I've been told contradictory things.
I mean,
about whether I have a tan or not.
You're not like, you know, at like a Jersey Shore level type of tan, but
nor would
but
I want
you,
to. Yeah,
but for you, I would say, you know, this is a certain level of color.
Are you trying to indirectly say I'm a very pale person?
No, I'm not. I'm directly saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you look pretty tanned.
Okay.
You look pretty.
That's weird.
What?
Because I haven't been out in the sun.
Yeah, you look a little tanned.
I look a little tanned, okay.
Yeah.
Do I always look a little tanned?
Maybe you always do. Okay. You might, maybe it's a shirt you're wearing. I think a lot of your skin tone has to do with what you're wearing. I'm sure there's like a whole science. I'm sure there's a whole university course on clothing with skin connection.
Didn't you see Roger and Me?
Nope.
There's that scene.
Oh, I did see Roger and
there's
Me.
There's that scene where he goes to this.
Oh yeah, and they
shirt. They give him an orange shirt, and he just kind of like makes fun of the whole thing.
Yeah. I the only scene I remember in that movie is the murdering of that bunny.
Oh, I don't remember that.
It's this graphic scene. Watched it in like first year sociology at Ryerson.
Yeah.
Yeah, they showed us that and
what was the point of that?
I don't even know what the point was, but it was in the documentary.
Oh, okay.
Are you a Michael Moore fan back in the day?
Yeah, I was. I mean,
seemed it became cool to say the guy's a piece of shit after a while.
Well, no. I don't know. I feel like I actually don't really have much of an opinion either way, but I think he represents probably a far side of the political spectrum that mm-hmm. I could see, you know, a lot of people not supporting.
I was a big fan of his at one point. I read all his books, watched all his documentaries, and then people were like, he's distorting the documentation.
Well, you know what? Like, I mean, and I think I even talked about this during that course in my essay, but like everything. Anytime you're trying to push any type of political agenda, it's going to be biased. It's going to seem like propaganda.
Someone once said, maybe it was the exact same course, that was like, no documentary is a true documentary. The second you edit something, mm-hmm. it's no longer a documentary. Your editorial judgment is taking over, and it's not a true – unless you put a camera up and just record straight from start to finish – and put that on, which would be a hell of a boring documentary.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as a true documentary.
No.
You're going to have your biases. I don't really care. I don't even care if you're reenacting scenes. In a, I don't care. Tell me a good story. Entertain me.
Yeah, it's entertainment. And sometimes it's educational.
Yeah, in a lot of cases it's educational.
But even like down to the, you know, choosing what questions you ask your subject, that's framing a story right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's it.
Luckily, this podcast way, we just roll and you hear everything.
That's the great thing about podcasts. You can do that. Yeah. And I don't know, this might be really boring to some people.
No, maybe not.
Maybe we should edit some of this.
Maybe we should. Maybe we should. Maybe I should ask you questions. Take out my questions, and then we'll just go.
Yeah.
You know, do the. Remember that audio documentary we did on the life of Wei Ting back in the day?
Oh yes,
it was great. Trish Stratus was a big fan of it.
Oh, was she?
Remember that? She was like in studio when we played it. And then she was like, "After, can you do one for me?"
I don't think I was there. So
you were definitely there.
I wasn't in. Oh, I was.
It was. What was at CFRB.
Oh, okay.
I think it was our anniversary show.
Oh, right.
She was there.
Okay.
And we played it right before she came on. She was just, she loved it.
I have a terrible memory.
She was a big fan of yours after.
Yeah. No, she's not.
You went to interview her, and your bad memory came into effect when you were like, 6-time women's champion, and she corrected you.
Yeah.
Said 7. Oh, none of them matter after 2 anyway.
Yeah.
Titles.
Yeah. No, I didn't feel bad about that.
So, Wei, what have you been up to since Monday? How's life?
Fine.
Well, what's your update on this Tim Hortons? Do you have a verdict on it right by our place? We've been talking about it for weeks.
There's a new Tim Hortons, and you know what? I think last time I mentioned that they offered soy milk and skim milk.
Okay, what do they have now?
Just skim milk.
Whoa!
And taking away the soy option.
Wow.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Man, that's going to leave a soy spot for those. You want to hear a crazy story about that Tim Hortons today? I went and I got a bagel today. Still can't get the goddamn sesame seed bagel. Once again, she was like, "No, we don't carry that at this establishment." I'm like, "What? What fucking backwards ass Tim Hortons is this?"
Do all the other Tim Hortons have them?
I've never encountered a Tim Hortons that doesn't carry sesame seed bagels.
Okay,
like pretty standard fare for bagels. Come on, they're like, "We have the everything bagel." Yeah, you don't have everything. You have one. So I got that and a coffee, and I came back, and I'm eating it here in my room. And then our traffic coordinator, Laura Abel, knocks on the door, and she comes in. She's like, "Hey, I was just at Tim Hortons, and your passport photo was on the floor." And it's
weird.
It's one of the photos that I just had in my wallet, and it must have fallen out. She brought me back a passport photo that I'd fallen out in Tim Hortons.
Wow, what a story.
Isn't that weird?
I know.
Strange.
Imagine if somebody else had seen it.
They probably wouldn't know who I was.
Yeah.
You want to hear another quick story?
All right. Will this one also...
this one has to do with you, actually.
Okay.
And something getting lost and not being delivered back to me.
All right.
You may have recalled during our Christmas exchange that I told you that I had gotten you another gift that hadn't arrived yet.
Oh.
So it's now been 7 weeks.
Oh.
So I'm starting to be like, what the fuck's going on here?
Okay.
And I looked up the confirmation. I sent it to this address with my home suite number and my home postal code. So the wrong address.
How did you do that?
I did the autofill. And for whatever reason, it filled in all this wrong information.
I always like triple check when I submit my credit card.
I don't even check once. So I don't know where the fuck it could be in this building. It could be, I don't know where it is.
What would that be? What would even that address be?
It doesn't exist. Like the address, I'm sure they took it here.
Yeah.
But they don't know who John Pollock is. Yeah. Much the suite number doesn't exist in this building that I put down.
Right. And
where
and
would
also,
it be?
And you know, and since the postal code screwed up. You know,
I do have a tracking number, so I'm going to further investigate this. Well, is there a chance I could be just fucked out of my money here? Because the onus is on me to provide the right address.
I don't know. I guess you could always tell them that you screwed up and see if they can do something for you.
They're not.
But I want my damn present, man. You better sort this out.
Well, I was not even going to bring it up. I was just going to wait for it to arrive and give it to you for your birthday.
I actually completely forgot.
So I know.
You could do that. Yeah.
So, well, if you get a T-shirt for your birthday, you can know that I'm regifting.
All right.
Not even regifting. I'm giving it for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm fine with that.
I actually
expect anything.
I actually got you something in Hawaii.
Oh, did you?
I forgot it today. Oh, okay. So I'll give it to you.
So you're just setting me up for disappointment.
Your birthday's going to be tremendous.
Yeah.
You're going to get tons of stuff. Christmas and a Hawaiian gift.
Good.
All wrapped up in one.
I look forward to that.
So there you go. The Royal Rumble is what we're going to be chatting about today. This is the only Royal Rumble we reviewed this year.
Yeah.
2003.
We got to save them up, you know?
I know. I realize, you know, this sounded ludicrous during year one when I remember people were like, oh, what if you run through all these? I'm like, do you know how many fucking events there are? And it's like, you know, there were that first year, we must have reviewed like four or five WrestleManias in year one. We really weren't booking long term.
I don't think we thought we would do it past, do this podcast.
Nah, we were going to be done after like 10 episodes. And that'd be it. Get it off our chest and be like, ah, wrestling sucks.
Yeah.
But we're still doing it. I think that's a testament.
Yep.
So now we got spaces out a bit more.
Yeah.
So days after Raw, A, easy to watch. B, I kind of like doing those. The kind of, it's like the bonus features on a DVD when you review the day after, the aftermath of a show.
And maybe we'll even break it down even further. Maybe we'll do the SmackDowns, the Sunday Night Heat, and the Shotgun Saturday.
The velocity coming off of Backlash one year, you know, the key. They were going to put out a Best of Velocity DVD this year.
I know.
Like, talk about, man, scraping the bottom of the barrel of ideas, but a DVD that would actually have some interesting stuff on it.
Yeah.
Like, you have Cena and Bryan Danielson that I can only assume will be on that DVD.
But it's only like a 6-minute match.
Doesn't matter to people.
Like, why? I understand that there's a market of people that'll buy anything, especially if it's a collection, but you could find that stuff on the internet.
You know, a point that I forgot to bring up last week on the show was that Raw where Bret Hart came back, do you know what was even more significant about that night?
No.
Maybe not as significant as Bret coming back, but that was the first dark match Bryan Danielson worked after signing with the company.
Oh, wow.
In Dayton, Ohio that night.
Cool.
And then look at him now.
Look at him now.
More over than Bret.
No, I'll say
in 2014.
Of course. Yeah.
I would say Bret never got some reactions the level Bryan has gotten over the last year.
I agree. Of course.
Who do you think Bryan is going to face at WrestleMania this year?
Well, for me, this might all be moot.
Why do we do this on this show? Save this for other shows. Who cares?
It's always
fun to look back at.
I always envision him versus Cena for the title.
Yeah.
That's my pick.
That's your... Is that...
That's my ideal. But
what do you think will happen? I'm predicting right now it's him and Sheamus in a pretty much nothing match.
That'll suck so much. Hunter's tied up with...
Punk
right now.
That to me is what I would have been going towards. Danielson or Bryan and Hunter at Mania.
Yeah.
That's been the story all year.
Mm-hmm.
It's leading up to Hunter tapping out to the S-Lock.
I don't think there's any interest in seeing another match with Orton. So
I'm not interested in Punk and Hunter at all. At all.
Me neither.
Me, that program, when I hear those two names together, it's like that's the program that to me iced Punk's momentum in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Losing to Hunter on one of those pay-per-views in 2011 after his return. Just completely, I don't know, thwarted where his momentum at
the time. Would you put with Hunter is a better question.
Bryan Danielson.
Right.
I don't know why I keep saying Bryan Danielson. It's like I forget this guy's name. I'm off my game.
That's his real name. You should
refer
to guys only by their real names.
Daniel Bryanson.
That doesn't work as well.
Wasn't that your joke on the show? A few weeks
Daniel
ago.
Daniel Bryanson?
I thought you called him. You gave him some funny name.
I called him Bryan Danielson.
Yeah, that was it. That was pretty funny. All right. I've had two coffees. I swear none of them were spiked.
Yeah, you're crazy. You're insane today.
Have you watched this Rumble? I haven't talked to you in a week.
I have watched it.
I talked to you 2 days ago. That's right.
I watched it. Well, why would I be here?
No. I mean, you didn't finish my question. Did you watch this before this past week?
I believe so. It's been such a long time, I actually don't remember.
This pay-per-view was the...
No, I probably didn't, actually.
No? You had never seen this Angle-Benoit match? Because
that's what you
would have remembered.
I may have, actually. I don't know.
Hunter Steiner you would remember.
11
too.
Years ago, so I may have.
I can remember. I can tell you what I had for dinner that night.
Oh, what did you have for dinner? Holy shit.
That Royal Rumble was the first Rumble where I got together with all my friends and did my first ever Royal Rumble pool.
Mm.
And that was the best part of that show, was coming up with all these ridiculous categories, losing money.
You know, the Rumble...
It was so fun.
The Rumble is really like the only wrestling event where you can justify any type of betting system like that.
it's become the most that's become the my favorite part of a Rumble. Like, I could not watch this pay-per-view now without watching it with people and having money on the line. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's the only time of the year I have the gambling itch. It's the Royal Rumble and just insane guesses. Like, that's all you're... I said it on the law. I'm giving away one of my picks for my surprise entrant. I'm picking Bruno Sammartino in his hometown of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
To come out.
That's quite smart.
I don't think it's crazy. 81 years old, I think the man can do it. I think he can come in for 4 minutes. All the guys would oversell for him. And then he's thrown out by Roman Reigns.
I suppose, yeah. It'll get a huge reaction.
I'd love it.
I don't know. I don't think that'll happen.
No?
But I think
you,
it's a worthwhile guess.
You are on the hot seat this Sunday because you are the defending champion of the Law's Royal Rumble pool.
That's right.
From 2013.
Thank you, Sheamus, from 2013.
Sheamus?
Yeah, I think he was my big...
Oh, yeah. Winner. Didn't he... Did he eliminate the most people?
You know what? I don't...
Who won the Rumble last year? Quick.
It was, oh my God.
You are not shaming yourself, because when we interviewed Chris Jericho this year, I asked him the same question. He was in the Rumble,
yeah,
and he couldn't tell me who won the Rumble.
Wait, I could tell you who won. It was John Cena.
It was John Cena.
Yeah.
Any clue as to who the last person was in the ring with him?
The last person.
Who will not be one of the final two this year.
Randy Orton?
Ryback.
Oh.
Remember when he was important?
Not really.
It was a long time ago. Yeah. It was a year ago. So that's what I'm looking forward to on Sunday, is our Royal Rumble pool and whether we will get a new Okada pose from Wei Ting.
Oh, yeah, right.
When he had the money. Great shot.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
Actually, while I was in Hawaii, we did this hike to this. It was an hour and a half hike to this 200-foot waterfall.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the Okada Rainmaker pose in front of this 200-foot waterfall.
Okay.
Just trying to emulate Okada.
Nice.
Maybe I'll post it one of these days.
If you had Instagram, you'd be able to do that.
Yeah, I don't. So I'll put it on Twitter or something.
You can give it to Braden.
I'll give it to Braden. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to send it to him, and you guys can see it at Law Radio on Instagram.
Like it, please, everybody.
I'm turning into Jimmy Hart here. Just plug, plug, plug.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get into the Rumble right now. But before we do that, let's plug our own fan-supported Royal Rumble pool, which you can still join until Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, no money on the line, but this is more important than money.
We're going to come up with a prize, and we'll announce it on Impact, on Review and Impact this week, that the winner will get.
Okay.
So go to tinyurl.com/rumble2014.
Mm-hmm.
Do not post your picks on the message board.
Yeah, don't be an idiot, guys.
Yes. This thing is half contest, half IQ test.
Yeah.
And you can see who's winning and failing based on the responses on the message board.
Yep.
If you have posted your picks there, put them into the survey, or else we're not even going to look at them. We're not even going to look to see if you had a prayer of coming close. You could ace them, and you still lose by stupidity.
Why would I waste my time with idiots who don't even know how to follow instructions like that?
Yeah. Garov has maintained that he has only entered once, and Wei's still going to have to do some detective work this weekend before we announce the winner.
I'm going to have to check every single person's IP address. Every entrant.
I don't think Garov's going to win, though.
You don't think so?
It takes... The chance, like this Royal Rumble pool, if there's one thing I've learned after doing this, we've been doing this pool a few years now,
yeah,
is that it's so based on luck.
Yeah.
Like, you might be able to pick the winner, which is cool for 5 points, but we have so many categories that so much of it is guessing.
Yeah.
Like, usually the shortest person in, it's like no one gets it. Most eliminations, it's like this year, yeah, probably Reigns seems like the one, but who knows?
So then what we're saying is, try and cheat. Go ahead. Submit 48 times.
Oh, it'd be awesome if Garov submitted and lost on 47 different scorecards. I want you to check that, because we should read each score of his 47 to see if he could fail 47 different ways.
Sure.
That would be time-consuming to come up with 47 different scenarios for all those categories.
Obviously, yes.
Shit's tough.
Yeah.
All right. So was part of this pay-per-view to watch from Boston, Massachusetts, the home of John Cena, just outside from West Newbury, Massachusetts. Sunday, January the 19th of 2003. This show brought to you by the song Falling Apart by Trust Company. a CD I actually bought in 2003.
Oh, wow. Off the strength of this
no,
exposure?
It was two of my friends, my good pals, Ed and Eric. They were huge Trust Company fans, and their CD was coming out right around this time. And I remember us at lunch at the cafeteria at high school, and they were like, we're going to buy the Trust Company CD. So I came with them, and I wanted to feel included, so I bought it as well.
They peer pressured you into buying a Trust Company
no,
CD.
No, I peer pressured myself because I just wanted to be part of the group.
Yeah, okay.
And they had this song, and there was a, I think it was the Vengeance show the year prior, where they also had another Trust Company song. They only had two songs, and WWF used both of them.
Wow.
So there you go. We heard the song to death over the course of these 3 hours on this pay-per-view. And they had a video to start the show. This was the first Rumble way after the brand split. There was a lot of confusion as to what were they going to do for the Rumble for this particular year, and how would it work? Like, you have a title on both shows. So what they went with was 15 performers from Raw and 15 from SmackDown would be in the Rumble, and the winner would get... Did they state if they get their brand's champion or they get to choose?
They set their brand's champion.
Right. Because the following year would be the year Benoit won, and he would choose to jump to Raw. So they have all these different performers discussing being in the main event of WrestleMania and how it all starts tonight. The most hilarious one was Scott Steiner saying he belongs in the main event of WrestleMania, when, truth be told, he would not even make it onto the card of WrestleMania that year. Unreal. Challenges for the title and then doesn't even appear at WrestleMania the following year.
I think they had a lot more higher hopes for Scott Steiner, and we'll get into that.
Oh, we will. They started off, we had Michael Cole and Taz on SmackDown's announced team, and then Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler would be calling the Raw portion of the show. And we traveled back to a far away Mr. Ting, where Brock Lesnar and The Big Show were feuding. It would ultimately lead to a confrontation between Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker, and Paul Heyman was involved. What a time warp.
It's bizarre. What another coincidence. They must be booking for our show again.
Big Show and Brock Lesnar would kick off the show. This was coming off of the Survivor Series in 2002, another show that we have reviewed amongst our millions of podcasts, where Brock Lesnar lost the title. It was his first loss in the company after Heyman turned on Lesnar, joining the Big Show, which I guess they're not going to bring up now, as Heyman and Lesnar, somehow throughout this whole UFC run, they were able to reunite. We never really got a storyline explanation for their reunion.
No, I mean, friends fight and then they get back together. They're forgivable people.
I guess so. Even if one cost his client the title, they get over
shit
it.
Shit happens.
Yeah. I'll win plenty of titles in my life. So Big Show comes out with Heyman, sporting his 2003 apparel of black Levi's jeans and a tank top with a crew cut. This was Big Show version 3, 4, 5.
But I like the pants better than, you know, just the singlet.
He was not in great shape at this time, so the pants certainly covered a lot.
It kind of made him look a little bit more street, less like a big...
Well, he was wearing street clothes.
Yeah.
Black Levi's. Better than blue jeans.
Yeah.
Which he did wear during his early days in the WWF, his big nasty days.
Right.
The winner gets the final spot into the Royal Rumble, which, given the fact that people like Tajiri were in the Rumble, makes you question why it was...
What was the storyline here? Why were these two... Why did these two have to fight for a spot?
I guess that it came down to there was one spot left.
So the what? Did they both forget to enter until
maybe,
the last minute?
Well, Brock Lesnar, his agent is gone, so he's now got to deal with all the paperwork.
Right.
He needed an assistant.
He let it slip, man.
Yeah.
Should have applied earlier.
This was before he had Sable, maybe, to check all his, get his entry forms in. You got to do this stuff in advance when it comes to dealing with WrestleMania.
Hold on, wait a second, but Heyman's guy is also in this.
Well, I mean, this was, maybe it was his desire to try and keep Brock out of the Royal Rumble, and he felt his guy was the only one who could possibly beat his former client, Brock Lesnar.
He made the Big Show purposely wait and miss the deadline.
Exactly. This is all Heyman at work. I never thought I would say this, but I thought Brock Lesnar looked smaller here than he does today.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's definitely a gigantic man today.
Definitely looks younger, maybe a little bit more lean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he had turned babyface at this point. Kind of a move I was somewhat critical of. I didn't think it was time yet to turn Brock face. You could always eventually do that, but I never found him to be the most... I just don't like him as a babyface.
I just think he's so much better as a heel.
Mm-hmm. So,
do you think he'll ever turn face right now?
I think eventually you will, especially if they extend this deal. But I love this role he's in right now.
Yeah.
Where, you know, even though they've somewhat, you know, it's not been flawless booking of the guy, he still has that certain monster aura.
And I think to be a babyface would require him to talk a lot more without Paul Heyman there.
I think you'd have to eliminate Heyman. And you take Heyman away from Lesnar, and that severely lessens Lesnar's effectiveness, I feel. So anyway, the match begins. Lesnar just hits him with all these shoulder blocks in the corner and then hits the first of, I believe, 456 belly-to-belly suplexes on this card. This was the pay-per-view of belly-to-belly suplexes throughout the show.
But especially in this match, I mean, you know, we've said it before, I think Brock has great chemistry with the Big Show, mainly because he's a guy who he's strong enough and has enough of a reach to be able to grab the guy and just toss him around. And it's just fun to see somebody toss around one of the biggest people on the planet.
And this would give Big Show just so many back problems after this. And he would cite, you know, Lesnar just throwing him around, like a guy that big, a Big Show size, taking all of this on his back.
Yeah.
It was unreal.
And
it wasn't like they built to one big suplex. It was like it was transition spots. It was just, when in doubt, throw the fucker.
Yeah. But, you know, it made for a better match, too.
It did. The crowd was into this. It was...
But, yeah, definitely, it definitely looked like it took a toll on somebody as large as the Big Show. And I wonder if they'll work a match this coming Sunday. Anything similar or maybe slightly different?
Does it go longer than this match did, which was 6.5 minutes this Sunday's?
Yeah.
It does?
I think so. You only get so many Lesnar matches, and I imagine they want to, you know, give fans their money's worth.
Is there any chance this Sunday that Brock appears in the Rumble after the Big Show match?
Absolutely.
You think so?
Yeah.
Will he be one of your surprise guesses?
Would he be a surprise guess?
That'll come down to moderator Jason Agnew's call. Okay. I guess for our pool, I don't think – I stated you can't be on the roster, so it can't for ours.
Yeah.
Show just tosses him over the top to the floor and briefly got the advantage until Lesnar hit him with a German suplex for a two count. Then Heyman grabs onto Lesnar's leg and leads to him going into a big boot by the Big Show. Lesnar counters a chokeslam, hits another belly-to-belly, and then tosses Heyman into the ring, teases F5-ing Paul Heyman, which was the big, big spot they were building to, but gets stopped, takes a chokeslam by the Big Show, but kicks out at two. Big pop here for the kickout. And then Lesnar blocks a second chokeslam, shoves Big Show into Paul Heyman, and then hit this F5, which was about as good an F5 as you could get, given that it was the Big Show that he was lifting here.
I thought it looked great.
It was. He didn't get height on it, really. It was just like a lateral F5. Mm-hmm. I mean, picture the one he gave Rikishi. He sent Rikishi spinning like a frisbee. But hit it. 6.5 minutes. Lesnar gets the win. And surprise, surprise, Brock Lesnar will be in the Royal Rumble. And Big Show will be with a chiropractor.
Yeah, this to me just seemed like such an obvious and predictable result even before the match began. But with that said, the audience was still really into all the near falls, so it's a compliment to these two.
Terry Runnels, who was a backstage announcer at the time, you know, maybe they could bring back Terry because Cody's wife has just rejoined NXT as a backstage announcer, and you could have two generations of Rhodes female backstage announcers.
Yeah, I don't know how. Are they on good terms?
Terry and Dustin?
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay.
I don't know. I just remember that
Howard Stern interview from like 03, 04 where.
Refresh our memory. I'm not familiar with this.
He just didn't have much kind words to say about her. And
oh, this was Dustin.
Dustin, yeah. And
he was pretty complimentary to her in his book a few years ago.
Okay.
So I think so.
Maybe things are better now.
Yes. So Terry here. A one-time Fight Network media correspondent.
What?
There was one time she was on Fight Network Radio with me and Morrow, and we started talking about MMA, and she was like super into it. She was in Miami for the final Elite XC show, and I came up with the idea. I was like, hey, if I can get you media credentials, and you're there anyway, can you come on the show Monday and give us a live report of going to the Elite XC show? And she was like, yeah, sure. Can I bring somebody? I was like, yeah. She's like, okay, I'm going to bring Test. I was like, all right. So, or no, she was going to bring her boyfriend at the time, I think. Anyway.
New Jack?
No, this was pre-New Jack. So I got her credentials, and for whatever reason, didn't go with the boyfriend and ended up bringing Test. So the two of them went to the Elite XC show as Fight Network radio representatives. And yeah, she came on the show afterwards. So it was just, it was kind of cool.
That's amazing.
Random.
And that was the only time? That was the only,
only time.
Why didn't you call her back?
Because it was like, it was just because she was in the area. It's like, we weren't going to spend money to send her somewhere far.
Was she a good reporter?
Yeah, she was fine. She came on. She talked about all the different fights and stuff. It was interesting.
Okay.
At that time, doing Fight Network Radio, I had to book like 2 to 3 guests every single day of the week, plus the law.
Yeah.
So any interesting angles I could come up with, I did. Terry's in the back with Chris Jericho. The more and more when I go back to watch this, I didn't really enjoy this version of Chris Jericho.
Oh, me neither.
The goofy heel Chris Jericho.
You know, like the what he was saying. Sorry, are you going to go
nope,
through this?
Go ahead.
Well, what he was saying was seemed very well thought out and well written, but it just also felt really overacted and kind of unnatural. And I feel like this is definitely more suited to like a mid card guy. Like we all remember like the 1,004 holds. Those are great promos, but. I don't know. For some reason, the WWE just seemed like the character that he would come up with a couple years later with a slow-talking bit definitely suited him a lot more.
So going into the Rumble, one of the things I don't like when WWE does this is when going into the Rumble, they had already established who was number one and who was number two. They did a deal where Michaels was going to be number one and Chris Jericho then won a battle royal and got to choose any number he could enter the Rumble. And did he choose 30? No, he chose number 2 because he wanted to go the whole distance just like Shawn Michaels did in 1995 and win the Rumble from that spot. So it actually, you know, from a storyline perspective, their story going into WrestleMania that year was that Chris Jericho was going to outdo everything Michaels could.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the story here. And these two were having a great feud at this time and it was a fresh match that had never been done before as well. So we knew that going in. We transition over to
what
Ross
like
and Lawler.
What didn't you like about it?
I just didn't like, I just, you know, watching the Rumble every year, I like not knowing who's going to be number one and number two.
But they did have a story to tell.
Yeah, it's fine. It's not the end of the world. But there's some years they always do that where you go in knowing who's number 30 and who's number one, and inevitably it fucks up our pool. But also, that's why this year you had to pick like number 2 and number 29 or something like that. Anyway, we go to Ross and Lawler, and we have the World Tag Titles, not to be confused with the WWE Tag Titles at the time. We had two sets of tag titles.
Mm-hmm.
William Regal and Lance Storm were defending the titles against the Dudley Boys, a barely recognizable Bully Ray at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Man, if you would have guessed one of these four would be the cornerstone of a national promotion 11 years later, Bubba would have been probably my fourth pick of these four.
Yeah, if you were to ask me who out of these four I would end up choosing as best promo or best mic guy on the mic of the year, I'd say none of these guys. Or Regal, maybe. But you know what? Like knowing what we see of Bully Ray now, I have a new appreciation for watching some of these older matches of his just because he clearly wasn't really in as good of a shape as he is now, nor was he given a role as good as his is now. But still, he always seemed to be one of the sharpest guys in the ring, you know, always able to kind
of... He always had a great rap of putting matches together.
Yep.
Clearly always had a very strong mind for the business,
mm-hmm.
and it just seemed that over the last 3-4 years, everything's kind of clicked, and his physique certainly had a huge part to do with that.
Yeah, and it really felt like in this match, he was the one who made the most effort to get the crowd going because most of this match was kind of technically sound, but nothing very spectacular.
This was a tough crowd early on. They were really kind of somewhat sitting on their hands. And
these guys over at all, Regal and Storm, even the Dudley Boys right now reuniting after, you know, a failed split.
Yeah, that was to be the biggest knock on the Dudleys at the time was it just felt like two guys that failed on their singles careers. So we're going back to something that worked years ago.
But more so than that, I think it was just how stale Raw was at this time. You look at SmackDown and their tag team situation was just...
No, this was that golden period.
Yeah.
So the heels stare down Lawler. This was coming off a match they did on Raw between Regal and Lawler. And Regal had been using the brass nux gimmick, and Lawler outsmarted him using a chain on the Raw going into this. Bubba and Lance start the match. Storm and Regal would double-team D-Von later on with a clothesline, making frequent tags, keeping D-Von in the corner. Bubba would get the hot tag, came in, hit a big release German to Lance Storm, got a two count, used the dusty bionic elbow, a Bubba bomb for a two count on Storm, the what's up headbutt to Regal, and then a flapjack was delivered to Lance Storm. They go for the 3D, but Chief Morley, Val Venus, who was Bischoff's assistant at the time, comes down, and Regal has his nux, and this is behind the referee's back, but before he can use the nux, he walks into a 3D. D-Von then takes the nux and hits Lance with them, and they pin Regal, I believe, at 7:25 to win the titles. And Lance Storm has talked about this match, where they were told that afternoon, we're going to switch the titles, but don't worry, you're getting them back the next night. And they were like, well, what's the point? And that's what they would do. The next night, the heels would win back the tag titles.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why they decided to give the Dudleys the belts here. It just seemed like the Dudleys gained nothing from any title win. This is what, their 16th title win?
Sure.
They gained nothing. It's meaningless.
24-hour title reigns are like a kiss of death.
Just even beyond that, I don't think there's any reason for the Dudleys to have the titles right now.
And I've always been critical of that idea where, you know, it's the chase for the title and it's like, well, we're going to tease the title change and then reverse it. And it's like, then they've won the titles now. It's like the chase is gone, you know. They did this with Daniel Bryan. They did it with James Storm. It's like they win the title, but it wasn't for a long period of time. I think people, they've seen that visual now.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say this was a big deal here, these tag titles at the time, which were not over. But there you go, a 24-hour title reign for the Dudleys. Then we had a vignette for the Colossus of Boggle Road, Nathan Jones.
I'd indicate that I was pretty fed up with the breaches in security and the deliberate sabotage of the prison system.
Witnessing the breakdown of law and order in the Queensland prison system.
More prisoners than ever are escaping.
Nathan Jones, known as the Colossus of Boggle Road.
The Colossus of Boggle Road.
It's the Colossus of Boggle Road, where he is serving time for armed robbery.
The tables turned for young Nathan when he was transferred to Brisbane Prison from Tasmania for security reasons.
The Premier has responded by ordering a review of all security procedures in the state's jails.
Let's isolate them and deal with them appropriately.
I am Nathan Jones. G'day.
He spent 10 years of hard time in an Australian prison. Nathan Jones on his way to the WWE.
Was this on your version?
No.
I had my tried and true VHS copy away.
Okay.
Where Nathan Jones, I find it funny that they edited this vignette off what you watched.
Yeah, I didn't get to see it.
This contained actual news footage describing his arrest for armed robbery, spending 10 years in an Australian prison, and he's coming to... And Michael Cole proclaims, he spent 10 years in prison, and he's coming to the WWE.
What happened to him recently? Wasn't he in the news recently?
I don't think so.
Oh.
He was in a Brad Pitt movie a few years ago.
Okay.
I can't remember the movie. Someone will let us know. But a gigantic failure in the WWE. He came in. He was so green that they took him out of... He was supposed to tag with The Undertaker at WrestleMania, and they took him out of the match because they thought Taker in a handicap match would be much better. And then eventually they went on a tour of Australia. He got to Australia, his home, and just said, I'm not coming back. I'm staying home. And that was the end of Nathan Jones.
Yeah. Well, you know,
footnote.
He looks like a very impressive person.
Totally the kind of guy that they would jump on.
Yeah. I mean, of the same mold or similar mold to, you know, like a Batista or Brock, but...
Wrestled in Japan.
Yeah, but just no substance at all.
Nothing.
Promo
he was
really
not
there.
He was not advanced in any particular skill set. And then, Wei, the unofficial main event was next. The first ever... Stepmother, stepdaughter match.
They actually had Tony Chimmel announce it that way.
Following contest is a stepmother versus stepdaughter match scheduled for one fall. In the ring, Dawn Marie.
Maria Wilson.
Well, Dawn Maria is a recent widow. She was married just over 2 weeks ago to Al Wilson in, well, the public wake this past Thursday on SmackDown.
This was, you know, WWE storylines, the Al Wilson death might be at the top for some people of the worst wrestling storyline ever.
That's even hard. That's hard to say. I don't know if this tops, you know, even Katie Vick from that same year.
That's tough. The SmackDown going into this Royal Rumble was the Al Wilson funeral show, which is a show down the roadway we absolutely have to watch.
Okay.
From an on-screen in memory of graphic for Al Wilson. It was actually played by the real life father of Tori Wilson, who was died from excessive sex with Dawn Marie on their honeymoon, which was being filmed.
Yeah. It might have been a murder.
Maybe. Yeah. Could have been. So this video package, the amount of effort that went into this.
A week ago, I was the happiest woman in the world. I married my sweetheart, Al Wilson. And despite all the jealousy and all the interference of some of his family members, Al and I, we still fell in love.
I want you to be happy, but you're being used. Dawn Marie is making you look ridiculous. Why can't you see it?
We were on our honeymoon. Everything was so perfect.
Al, are you ready?
Again.
Come in here. Yes. Again, Al. Come on.
Oh. Oh, my God.
Al, honey, I'm feeling frisky.
Al? Now, Al's passed. Gone. I loved Al Wilson so much, and that's why I will respect his wishes, and I will present to you the public viewing of Al Wilson.
You said you would take care of me forever. Tori, the longer you stand here doing this, the more these people are going to see straight through you. I can't believe you actually think you're going to make these people believe that you loved your father. You didn't give a damn about your father. You didn't want your father to marry me. You didn't want your father to be happy. All you cared about was yourself. You killed your father. You did.
Had this great instrumental theme. They go over his death, and then they had the public viewing on SmackDown where Dawn blames Tori for Al Wilson's death. They get into a fight at the wake and ends with Tori leaning over her father and Dawn coming up from behind with a lamp and broke it over top of Tori. I'm not even going to bring up how ridiculous it is that this woman, 3 days after a lamp was shattered over her head, walks out without a scratch for this match. God, did this look absolutely hideously bad.
This was really cheesy, porn-level acting.
This was on the same show where you had the SmackDown 6. Like, yeah. What a contrast.
I mean, I will say, I think every show...
Listen, I'm all for soap opera shit if it's good. This sucked in any iteration of fandom.
It was pretty bad. It really felt like I was watching a porno, but instead of like getting me excited for a scene...
It was
I'm supposed to get excited for a wrestling match. But I mean, it was like memorable and kind of fun for how bad it was.
Though the pay-per-view before this, you did get the near-porn scene with Tori and Dawn Marie where they make out on the... some hidden sex tape.
Oh.
Yep. Dawn Marie and Tori Wilson on pay-per-view. Do you want to describe Dawn Marie's entrance to the ring?
No. What she was wearing?
What was she?
She came out wearing a black veil over her face.
That's funny.
To mourn the death of Al Wilson.
Yeah.
Dawn attacks Tori before the bell even rings. She catapults Tori right into the mat and then applies a Fujiwara armbar. Fit Finley, busy at work here. And she starts attacking the left arm of Tori. Tori dives into a flapjack, comes out of the corner, and like headbutts Marie in the uterus. And they both just plunge to the mat out. There's a swinging neck breaker by Tori as she starts a comeback. And out of nowhere, with this swing neck breaker, gets the win at 3 minutes and 38 seconds. And the highlight of this match, if there was one, was Michael Cole proclaiming, "What could this match mean to Tori Wilson? But despite the win, this match cannot bring her father back."
Here is your winner, Tori Wilson.
Tori got some revenge.
Mixed emotion from Tori Wilson, and you got a question, Taz, what this victory actually means to Tori here tonight.
I don't know. Not in bad taste, but she got the win.
She picked up the win, but she can't bring her father back.
What was going on? This was so stupid.
Yeah, these two poor guys, Cole and Taz, having to sell the storyline.
Oh, my God. These the same two, in a minute, would have to call Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit. And here they're calling Dawn Marie and Tori Wilson. Well, this was just a hideous program.
At the very least, maybe this pro wrestling match victory will help her grieve a little easier.
Yeah.
This match was just not good. Crowd started to turn on it in the middle, and then I wonder if they just decided to pull the shoot towards the end, thus the kind of anticlimactic finish.
So Dawn yells, to the delight of everybody watching, that this isn't over. Feud would continue.
I mean, I think this was probably Dawn Marie's most memorable WWE angle.
Well, that's not saying a whole lot. It's the only thing I remember her doing in this company, realistically. Stephanie McMahon is in the back. At this time, she was the GM of SmackDown, walks up to Eric Bischoff, who was the GM of Raw, and a 10-year-old Randy Orton, who's hanging out with Eric. And he just says bye and takes off.
He was injured at this time.
Yes. Yeah, this was before the RNN updates would begin. And said Vince McMahon had shown up on Raw the Monday before and was giving Eric Bischoff 30 days to turn Raw around. You had Vince McMahon show up and pretty much say, Raw sucks right now, and Bischoff has 30 days to pull up something great. So he's against the clock here, but he's teasing something big, and he tells Stephanie he has an atomic bombshell for everybody.
Which was what?
It would eventually be that Austin was coming back at the next pay-per-view. But they, at the same time, I believe the original plan was they were hoping that Bischoff could announce Goldberg's coming in before WrestleMania, because at this point in time, they had started talking with Goldberg, but they were very far apart on a deal.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the bombshell would turn out to be Austin. Stephanie says she has her own bombshell for SmackDown that Thursday, and that would be the return of Hulk Hogan.
Man, just like, speaking of like porno acting, this just,
Stephanie's really bad.
There's always so much sexual tension in these scenes, but with Steph and Bischoff, and I don't know how much of that was intentional or not.
They did that one angle, that Halloween episode where they made out, and then never referenced it again with these two.
Yeah. So I don't know. Just all these bad cheesy lines. Bischoff kind of giving that look.
Stephanie says, "Blood is thicker than urine." To insinuate that Eric Bischoff's veins are flowing with urine. And then Bischoff's...
Is that on reference to something? Like, didn't he get pissed on or something? I don't know.
Of all the degrading angles, I don't know if he was pissed on.
Okay.
And then Bischoff says, "Well, money is thicker than blood." This was 1978 VHS porn quality text.
Sure.
Then, did you get the Sean O'Hare promo, or was that edited off?
That was gone, too.
Oh, this was, he does a pretty much against a green screen where he talks about if there is a God, and whether there is one or not, says church is a farce, you are your only judge, and if there is a God, he will forgive you. A very forgotten character, Sean O'Hare's WWE run. Then we got a video to promote our next match, the showdown of Triple H and Scott Steiner for the Raw World Heavyweight title. Steiner debuted at the Survivor Series the prior fall with his infamous "Give me the fucking mic" speech. And he would interrupt a ceremony for Triple H on Raw and would sign with Raw in order to get a title shot. And the story is that Triple H is scared of Steiner, and they had all these games. It was like the Olympics of the WWE going into this. They had an arm wrestling contest. They had a pose down, a ridiculously non-wellness era pose down, and a push-up contest. And this also featured Triple H in his underwear and a bomber jacket. He had a Triple H bomber jacket in 2003.
This is just so goofy, man. I mean,
all done to Trust Company as well.
The thing is, like, you know, Steiner showing up here, great look. And I think there's a lot of buzz, even amongst fans, as, you know, this is one of the few WCW main eventers that I think people actually wanted to see come in for a big run. So then he comes in, and then he opened his mouth. And you can't even hear what most of this guy's saying half the time. Like, there are, like, almost too many muscles around his mouth. So it was even evident from that point on that it was going to be hard to push this guy as a babyface against Hunter, who was much more well-spoken, seemed much sharper about everything, and also probably wasn't the most generous in terms of, putting this guy over. It wasn't working out. And man, just how about a feud instead of a... Like, instead of who's got the bigger muscles, how about a feud about wanting to win the world title? Instead, we get pose downs and then, you know, Hunter in his underwear.
It was a very backwards program. I mean, Steiner, you're right. They kept him out of the ring until the Rumble, at least on TV. They had him working house shows, but very short matches. I mean, the guy had, I mean, gone through so many injuries at this point. Hadn't really done anything since, I think he did one of those WWA tours in 2001, but I mean, Jesus Christ, this guy, to put him out here on pay-per-view for close to 20 minutes, I mean, you're really booking against yourself at this point. Hunter, this was a time where he received tons of criticism at the time, and you also had the comparison at the time of what was happening on SmackDown and their main events, and you compare it to this. So Steiner starts off the match with just all these forearms and chops. While Ric Flair is ringside in Triple H's corner, he sends Hunter back first into the post on the floor. He's working on the back. He even applies a Boston Crab, maybe just to try and appease himself to the Boston crowd. They did not care.
They didn't care for either guy here.
No. I mean, there was no babyface really here. It's like Steiner has never been, at least this incarnation of Big Papa Pump, was always a heel. I mean, I didn't think the crowd was that much behind him. They certainly weren't going to really get behind Triple H. Mm-hmm. And it just resulted in the crowd not being interested and that disinterest as this match just dragged and dragged, turned into
Flair was
anger.
Flair was probably the most over guy in the whole match.
It almost got comical here as Steiner no-sold this knee to the face. And the crowd was like, upset at him no-selling this spot. It was like, fuck this guy. And then Steiner got into this ridiculous go-to of any time he was in doubt, he just hit a belly-to-belly suplex. He then teased going for the Steiner recliner, his big move that the crowd could not have given one fuck about. There was no tease that, oh, he almost got him in the recliner. Nothing. Steiner then runs into a boot of Hunter to switch the momentum. Steiner got sent into the steps. Flair was trying to choke Steiner behind the referee's back. Steiner would block a pedigree and then catapults Hunter into the corner. Hunter then goes, this was the great spot, where Hunter went for a neck breaker, but Steiner fell forward in taking it the wrong way, and Ross just tried to cover, saying it was a diamond cutter attempt. And then later, Steiner went for a double underhook suplex, but in doing so, slipped and lost Triple H. At this point, the crowd was like, end this match. This sucks. Flair then takes the title with Hunter. They tease leaving. Steiner attacks them in the aisle, hits Hunter with a belt shot, so Hunter is now bleeding. Ross notes, I don't think I've ever seen so many suplexes in my life. As we close in towards the end of this match, where they're fighting in the crowd, they get back. Steiner gets booed for doing his push-ups. Hunter then tosses Earl Hebner to the floor, hoping that he'll get disqualified, and Hebner clues into what his plan is and refuses to DQ him. Refuses to DQ Hunter, knowing what he's trying to do.
What if there's a real injury?
Well,
he could lose his license for this.
Then Hunter took another belly-to-belly. There was a two count. So Hunter then low blows Steiner behind the referee's back, rolls him up for a two count. Then Triple H gets a sledgehammer, tosses Earl aside, and hits Steiner. And now Earl's had a change of heart. He says, no, this is just too far, and calls for the DQ. 18 minutes, 15 seconds. Crowd boos this finish. And we continued afterwards with a shot to the back of the with the sledgehammer to Steiner and to Earl, who then is over top of Hunter, grabs the sledgehammer, overpowering Triple H. And then Steiner gets the sledgehammer to hit Flair and Hunter with it. Crowd is booing all of this. Steiner recliner is applied to no reaction. The officials are trying to break it up. Eric Bischoff's in the ring. And Jim Ross is just pushing the fact that this is not over. We need a rematch.
I don't know anybody who is looking forward to that rematch. I'm guessing they had higher hopes for this, but man, I don't think the crowd was too upset to see Steiner not win this title.
Man, this thing should have been half the time, and even that, it was just a babyface people were not into once the match started. Mm-hmm. It was like Scott Steiner was pretty much a promo at this point in time in his career.
I always liked Steiner when he was sort of part of a bigger group, like when he was sort of a part, just one aspect of the NWO. I thought he did well, I just never liked him on his own as a main event guy.
You know what was crazy was like years later in TNA, when he had had even way more injuries, he brought back the Frankensteiner off the top rope.
No.
Man, this match could have used something like that. I think that would have woken the crowd up.
Maybe. As a babyface, yeah, he could have adopted that. But yeah, Scott Steiner at this point, there was something odd about him where he's obviously the muscles were always there, the look is still there, but then everything else just felt so sloppy. You know, anytime he opened his mouth, tried to cut a promo, it just sucked.
So, yeah, the WWE run of Scott Steiner, he's always been extremely critical of Triple H for, you know, not for holding him back. And certainly, I mean, the way to book Scott Steiner was not doing a 20-minute match on pay-per-view. This did him no favors at all. And, I mean, the WWE quickly, they got one more pay-per-view match out of these two, amazingly.
Do you think it would have been, do you think it would have worked out better to have, to push him, like, sort of from a mid-card up to the top? Or do you?
I think it was tough because it's like the guy wasn't coming in super cheap.
Yeah.
So you kind of had to justify that and at least try to get something out of him at the get-go. But, man, you book around guys' weaknesses, and his weaknesses were going long in a match at this point. But, you know, Hunter was always notorious for wanting to do those 20-minute main events, and I'm sure that the WWE audience as well, I don't know how they'd respond to a 6-minute title match.
Yeah.
You know, the main event standard was really high at this time.
I would have paired him up with a mouthpiece, too, just to... I mean, as a babyface, that might be a little tougher, but I just thought he was terrible.
I mean, people were more so into the delivery rather than what he was actually saying.
I thought his delivery sucked.
People got into him at that point. It just didn't work. That's pretty much how you can summarize Steiner's WWE run. What did work was the next match. We had a video setting up Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit, where Heyman had been aligned with Kurt Angle, and then Benoit beat Big Show in a number one contenders match, and in the lead up to this pay-per-view was also the introduction of Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas as Team Angle, which at this time in 2003, you know, Evolution was just forming at this point, this very time period. And at first, I mean, they really didn't click. It's not like people from the get-go were looking at Batista and Orton as these breakout stars that they would become. And Team Angle really represented what they were trying to get with Evolution, where Angle, Haas, and Benjamin were just this great little group that they put together.
What a strange idea. Three people who happen to be good at the sport that they are competing in.
Yeah. And they got over pretty damn quick. And they had some great hoodies as well. So we had Angle and Chris Benoit. Angle was legitimately coming off knee surgery a few weeks prior and was wearing a knee brace here that they tried to play up in the match as an injury that Angle was milking here for heel heat. Team Angle comes out with Kurt, but they get ejected before the match even begins. Benoit is just countering everything at the get-go.
Taz was very funny when they get ejected. Taz is like, oh, I thought Team Angle was just here to learn, to observe this match.
They were young boys.
Yeah.
Benoit tries for a sharpshooter early on and is attacking the right knee of Angle, which is the one that has the brace on it. The crowd wasn't, you know, I think they were still reeling from the last couple of matches at this point. And, you know, it took them a little bit in this match to really get into it. But when they did, they really got the crowd. There was a DDT on the apron by Benoit, and then subsequently went for a flying headbutt, but Angle got out of the way and he recovered, applied the sharpshooter, but Angle made it to the ropes. And halfway into this, you could tell the crowd much more invested into this. Angle hits this belly to belly suplex. Once again, the move of the night here. I don't know if these agents were conversing backstage.
Well, but I mean, it's sort of like a default move, especially in this period where a lot of people were doing them almost like a body slam. And, you know, if anyone was to do a German suplex, it would obviously be these two.
Yeah. All the guys that eventually needed neck surgery later that year were in love with the German suplex at this point in time. Yeah. Benoit is selling here and then fires back with these huge chops. Two Germans, then Angle reverses, he hits two Germans, Benoit counters and hits him with another German suplex.
I thought it was a great sequence.
Angle runs up the ropes and then suplexes Benoit off. Crowd was very hot here for this near fall.
I love that move. Sorry.
Always got people into the match.
And you know, it's a move where you don't think it'll work. Like, it's just a guy who runs up and flips another guy over. You don't think that would actually work, but it comes out of nowhere, and it always does.
It's like a burst of energy.
Yeah.
You know, like a guy selling and then all of a sudden kicks out at one or something. If it's done right, it can really get people into a match. So Benoit gets suplexed off, but then Benoit counters an Angle slam into the crossface. They go back and forth. Crowd is just loving this thing. They go back to the crossface. Angle rolls through. And then into an Angle slam. Both are down. I thought Taz was particularly great in the last half, explaining the different submissions.
Yeah.
When he went through a Peterson roll, a banana split. Yeah. I mean, just night and day from Taz today.
It was great that he was able to identify it, and great that these guys, it's not often where you find two people that are creative and technical and athletic enough to be able to pull a lot of these counters off.
Angle then hits a pair of Germans. We go back to Benoit, who rotates Angle right over top onto his chest. Crowd super hot at that. And then Benoit jumps three quarters of the way across the ring for a flying headbutt. Gets another near fall.
This was a headbutt that actually got a holy shit chant.
It was an incredible amount of height that he got and distance. And then Benoit gets dropped on the top turnbuckle, hit with an Angle slam for a two count. Cole is yelling that this match could headline WrestleMania, and then Benoit gets the crossface. Angle flips over into the ankle lock. Benoit can kick him off, but then Angle right back to it, and then for the first time, I believe this was the first time Angle did this, where he goes down almost into like a heel hook, and Benoit is finally forced to tap at 19 minutes and 47 seconds. This match to me held up as much as it did when I remember watching this that night, that this match just blew me away. These two put the prior match to such shame, it was just a complete 180 of two different title matches.
Absolutely. Great match. These two always had outstanding chemistry. And perhaps a little unfortunate that this was simply, you know, in the grand scheme of things, sort of a throwaway match for them to just kind of pass Kurt Angle's time with. But nonetheless, I really felt like at one point Cole mentions that this was Benoit's first title match since coming back from his neck surgery. And I feel like they kind of dropped the ball on that whole angle. You know, you see a guy like Triple H come back from a hamstring thing, a quad tear, and he's given the superstar treatment. But with Benoit, it was just sort of that moment. He just
showed up on Raw unannounced.
And then that was it. He was back into the mid-card, whereas I think, you know, in the next year, obviously, you'd see that ramp up. But here, I thought they kind of missed that opportunity.
So just a fantastic, fantastic match. One of the most well-remembered Rumble matches. I think if you put down a list of the greatest matches in Rumble history, this might be near the top of some people's list.
Not the WWE's.
And maybe not theirs.
No.
That one, it would not be. what do you think, by the way, of WWE's idea just to air all their pay-per-views with Benoit them? Do you think it's...
I like it.
I don't know why it's been such the big deal it is. Like, I can totally get why people don't want to watch Benoit matches, and I mean, I'm not crazy about them either, but I don't see it as, you know, for the big controversy that it's made out to be.
for one thing, anytime you're a public company, you're going to be faced with a ton of scrutiny from people that are simply looking for things to complain about. And I think this is one way to address that. But also doing so, first of all, we'll save up on a lot of edit time. And it'll, I mean, just imagine all the editing they have to do to kind of bounce around storylines and make sure everything's okay with taking out these Benoit matches and Benoit scenes. But I think this way will appease the people that are buying the service who want all the matches. And, you know, it's not like they can't do anything. I think you have to do something to acknowledge that, you know, this guy's a monster. This guy, you know, what this guy did was inexplicable and we're not supporting it. But, you know, he is part of our history. So here it is.
Do you think they're going to post the Over the Edge pay-per-view?
No.
I think
that would be really bad taste.
Yeah, actually. I agree with you. I mean, even if they cut out the references... Nobody wants to watch that match.
I don't think anyone wants to see that. I don't want to see Stone Cold Steve Austin wrestle right after he just found out that, you know, one of his colleagues died.
Yeah. I really hope they don't post that one.
Yeah.
Benjamin and Haas do come out after the match to hoist up Kurt Angle. And then they cut to a... They did a pay-per-view promo for one of their UK pay-per-views. And then they came back and Benoit's in the ring by himself with a standing ovation. And they play his music as he goes to the back. This was like a real step forward for this guy in his career, I thought, was that Rumble match. On a big pay-per-view, they gave him the time afterwards. And sometimes these calls, like, you had no idea going into this what kind of match they would have, if they'd get a standing ovation. Mm-hmm. But they made the call, go back to Benoit, give him this, like, hero moment. And I think so many times, especially TNA, they're guilty of this so many times where they'll do something big, boom, they cut away. And to me, this post thing to me was as important as getting him across as the match was.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I also think about how many opportunities TNA has to have these kind of grand epic matches that result in you know, standing ovations like this.
Maybe not as many today as they did in the past, but it was always just rush, rush, rush.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you just slow down and can take in something like this, I mean, this presents a guy as, you know, this is a big moment. In case you guys didn't realize, this was a huge match.
Yeah, yeah.
They go into the back.
What did Benoit do at Mania?
He ended up just being in this throwaway tag program, the multi-man tag match. RVD is stretching in the back, which kind of negates my whole point here of, like, what they did here with Benoit, where he was pretty much, he was Daniel Bryan in 2003.
Yeah.
He really was. Rob Van Dam is stretching in the back, and his partner Kane walks up to him. Great shot through the legs here as the camera's on the floor. And they establish that they are a team, but the Rumble is every man for himself. Kane says he spent an hour in the Rumble in 2001, and he won't hesitate to eliminate Rob, who replies in his always awesome scripted lines, "Oh, that's cool, man," and then called him dude. Ugh. RVD's scripted promos might have been the worst
of
anybody's. Oh, he's like a...
He's a surfer.
He's a surfer stoner guy. Yeah, just... Dude. How would they talk? Dude, that's cool. Whatever, man. Fuck. Howard Finkel is in the ring to introduce the Royal Rumble and go over all of the rules, including announcing that there would be entrance every 2 minutes, which weren't really the case in the Rumble. They varied in great length here. Most of them were around 90 seconds.
I love how every aspect of wrestling seems like it's worked. even the concept of time.
Yeah, like what? Anyway. So, no surprise, the match starts with Michaels coming out, and then Chris Jericho's theme music hits. And he does his entrance at the front, where his back is towards the arena, turns around, and it's Christian. And Jericho is coming up from behind Michaels and hits him with a low blow. A great start to the Rumble.
Uh-huh.
A great swerve. And Jericho gets a chair, hits Michaels, who ends up bleeding from the forehead.
Did Sean and Hunter both need to do blade jobs tonight?
I would say 100% no.
I didn't think
either were necessary. Yeah. The Hunter one especially. I think that was just, man, we got to get something in this match.
Yep.
You're right. Totally unnecessary blade jobs. Third into the ring was Chris Nowinski, who came in at the minute 30 mark, and he's just standing on the floor as Jericho continues to work over Michaels. He's beating him down. He's all bloody, and then just tosses Michaels over at 2.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. I thought this was great.
Yeah.
They tease, here's Michaels. He's going to turn back the clock, his first Rumble since that he had been in since 96 when he won. And he's out in 2.5 minutes by this asshole who cheap shotted him. Great build to WrestleMania. I love this.
Mm-hmm.
Rey Mysterio was in fourth, and man, they really loaded up the beginning of this Rumble. Mysterio came in, did the sequence with Jericho, which was one of the cool things about the Rumble at the time, was like Rey had just come into the WWF, and this was the first time you got to see him and Chris Jericho together since WCW. Mm-hmm. So you had all these fresh combinations as Nowinski remains on the floor and then comes in, and Jericho and Nowinski double team Rey. Edge is then in fifth. And he spears Jericho, spears Nowinski, and then even starts fighting with his tag partner at the time, Rey. And Edge misses a spear on the ropes. Then Rey misses a 619. They do a near elimination spot. And then in comes Christian in the number six spot. He runs in.
I love the choice of putting in Christian here, because not only do you have the storyline with Edge, who, you know, at this point they were on separate brands, but you also had the association with Jericho.
Yeah, you did. Christian, just horrendous ring gear at this point.
Yeah.
The long hair, this maroon, like One Piece, it looked like. Like, just goofy, goofy attire. And Nowinski, this would be a very, very famous spot, because it would be shown on, like, every news show he'd go on about the concussions he suffered in the WWF, was a double dropkick spot by Rey and Edge off the top. And they were going to simultaneously drop kick Nowinski, who was standing. But unfortunately, Rey hit him first, knocking him down. So Edge had nowhere to go but down straight onto Nowinski's face. And Jim Ross, watching this man nearly die, replied, "Magnum cum laude that."
Okay.
And this looked like Chris Nowinski was dead.
Yeah.
A devastating spot and a hell of an argument to retire the double drop kick off the top spot.
I'm sure there's
it's
a
just
safe way.
Way too much can go wrong in that spot. You got to time that thing so perfectly. And why a guy the size of Rey was doing that with Edge?
Well, I mean, I'm sure they've done it before. I think it was just probably a case of, I wonder if there's like a proper way to maybe bump further so that you're out of the way of both guys, but yeah, something went wrong here. And didn't this result in him wearing that?
It shattered his nose.
Yeah.
So just a terrible looking spot.
Yeah.
Chavo was in next, number seven, and Rey would hit him with a 619, a springboard senton, and then Nowinski catches him for a springboard senton, but Rey uses a Hurricane Rana to eliminate Nowinski, who probably just ran to the back seeking assistance. And then Jericho came from behind and just dumped out Rey. So not in this one too long. My favorite part of the entire Rumble was next, with Tajiri coming in. And as we mentioned, Ross and Lawler, the Raw team, was calling the Rumble. And Lawler notes, "Tajiri's one of my favorite announcers on SmackDown." And Ross replies, "No, you mean Funaki." Bill DeMott was next, then Tommy Dreamer, who brought out a trash can with all these gimmicks, got a late ECW chant.
Man, I don't know about your copy, but for me, I was watching the WWE edited version, and Tommy Dreamer came into his ECW theme. Came out to Alice in Chains? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was weird. It's like somebody, it's like they reverse edited it. Like, they put in the copywritten music.
That's weird. Yeah, because he never used that in WWF. Mm-hmm.
I was not a fan of Tommy Dreamer at all in the WWE. Just this one-dimensional, oversimplified version of the EC. I mean,
wait, he ate stuff, remember?
Yeah. Well, this wasn't even that. He's the hardcore guy here, and so let's just give him some weapons. That's why the audience likes him.
And he'd wear company T-shirts.
Oh, just
like
so,
the Royal Rumble shirt here.
So lame.
He hits Edge with a kendo stick shot. Knocks DeMott over the top. Christian and Jericho would then double team and eliminate Dreamer in like 30 seconds, and the crowd just booed this. But not before Dreamer got in a kendo stick shot on Chris Jericho, which cut open above his eye this nasty looking like welt on his just above his eye.
And that looked nasty for the rest of the night for Jericho, who was going very long in this match. Jericho would block a tarantula and then eliminate Tajiri. Number 11, B squared. This is what I love about going back to these Rumbles and watching some of these horrendous characters that by necessity they need to fill out spots. Bull Buchanan comes out, the former running buddy of John Cena, we are alerted. And B squared is thrown into the corner and out by Edge right away. Probably the quickest elimination in the entire Rumble. Chavo's then on the apron, gets speared off and eliminated by Edge. And then they did a spot where Jericho skins the cat, comes up, and then Edge and Christian are fighting against the ropes, and Jericho dumps both Edge and Christian from behind, and it's Jericho all by himself who's getting the Iron Man run in this year's Rumble.
The skin the cat is sort of a well-known Shawn Michaels spot too, yes, in the Rumble, so I thought it was neat how they tossed that in there for Jericho.
So as Jericho's awaiting the next entrant, it counts down. Rob Van Dam comes in. Very hot crowd for Van Dam, even at this point in 2003. And during this part, Jim Ross notes that Jericho just tried a shining wizard. And he's like, shades of the hurricane who's watching this at the world, which we didn't even get a cutaway to. There was no hurricane sighting at all on this Royal Rumble.
I thought it'd be on your version.
That was always a staple of a pay-per-view. You cut away to the guy, but nothing with the hurricane. 13th was Matt Hardy, who was the heel version on SmackDown at this point. This is where he was coming out with the Windows Media Player with the Matt facts. This one, strongly disliking mustard.
Interesting.
Yeah. Do you like mustard?
No.
You don't?
No.
I like mustard.
Well, it depends on what I'm eating it with.
Like a burger or a hot dog?
I'm not a fan. I like it with the like smoked meat.
Yeah? Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
They double team Van Dam, and then 14th in was Eddie Guerrero, who had just recently cut off his mullet, just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Didn't do an angle, just showed up one day without a mullet.
I was always surprised.
Money lost.
I know.
He frog splashed the face of Van Dam.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. It was a very awkward looking frog splash.
Well, that's for stealing his move.
Maybe. It's like, this is, I'll do it however I damn well please.
Yeah.
And then Matt hits a twist of fate to Eddie. And then, surprise, surprise, with Matt Hardy in the ring, Jeff Hardy is 15th. And once again, this was these little mini self-contained storylines you could do in the Rumble. When you had kept these two away, Matt had turned on Jeff and then jumped to SmackDown. And here you had them confronting each other, and Matt offers his hand, Jeff attacks him, and Matt was also accompanied by Shannon Moore at this point. He was just in his corner. And they did these great little spots.
The MF-er.
Where Matt was on the apron, and Jeff's trying to kick him out, and Shannon just gets into the table position and holds up Matt. It's a DDP yoga reference.
Oh, okay.
The table. And just hoists up Matt so he doesn't get eliminated. And then Matt's laid out. Jeff goes to the top for the Swanton. Moore comes in and is trying to stop him from jumping. And in order to block this, lays on top of Matt. So Jeff hits a Swanton to both of them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that did much for Matt, but nonetheless,
I guess them both.
Saved him from taking the brunt of the Swanton.
Yeah.
Number 16 was Rosie of the 3-minute warning. 17th was Test, who Ross noted, the testicles are on their feet, as he came out with Stacy Keibler. I had no clue if this man was a babyface or a heel at this point in time.
Stacy clearly was a babyface. And I think he was just sort of like a babyface with a heel attitude.
Great. The crowd was very much into Stacy. 18th was the first Royal Rumble for one John Cena, who did a freestyle coming to the ring in a retro Houston Astros jersey.
Some it was like a 2-minute rap. It was the entire
This was like the whole, by the time he was done, they were ready for the countdown again.
Yeah. It was good. I thought really fun. But the only thing is, I don't know why they never chose a beat that actually fit the tempo of his rhyme. It was just always distracting for me to hear him like so offbeat.
His lines included, he would cut you up like cucumbers, choke you like Sprewell chokes coaches, which was timely in 2003, and ends it by stating, my style is like a swollen penis. You can't beat me.
Why couldn't you beat a swollen penis? Yeah, I imagine it would have to be swollen.
It's, I guess, too erect.
What?
I don't know. John Cena wrestled at this time in full-length jeans.
Full-length jeans?
Him and Big Show.
the Levi connection.
Okay.
Yes. These were baggy pants, though. Yep. Probably uncomfortable to work in.
You put knee pads underneath.
This was his attempt to wear wrestling boots back in 2003. He would ditch those for the running Pumps. Shoes. Yep. Charlie Haas was in 19th, where during this sequence, Jeff Hardy climbed to the top and Jericho just shoved him out to eliminate him. Rikishi came in at 20th and had a stare down with Rosie. Then Jamal was in 21. 22nd was Kane, and they pushed how Kane set a record in 2001 with 11 eliminations, which to this day, Wei, is still a record.
Yeah, sure.
Could be beaten on Sunday.
I thought it was cool how they paired Jamal with Rikishi, the two being brothers. It's, you know, like the, kind of these little nods that I don't know if they were made aware of to the casual audience, but little nods to maybe the people that knew.
Yeah, I don't know how many people would be aware of that, but I think most would just assume all the wrestling Samoans are related.
Perhaps, yeah.
Shelton Benjamin was number 23. Number 24 was Booker T, who did a spin-a-rooney and then eliminated Eddie with a back body drop. Funny to see just where Eddie was, you know, he was in the mix, but not a focal point.
Didn't even get a big reaction when he came out, but of course he was still sort of a heel at this time.
I would also venture to guess that Booker T, I mean, got a good reaction here, but for a guy that was going to be taking on Triple H at WrestleMania, based on this Rumble, I bet you they had not planned that by this point.
Right.
Because he was given nothing special.
Yeah.
Like, to figure he would be second to the Rumble winner, you know, essentially in the hierarchy of things.
Mm-hmm.
25 was Tensai Train back in 2003, Matt Bloom. Did some power spots with Cena, Shelton, RVD. And then during this spot, Shawn Michaels runs out all bandaged up and bloody and attacks Chris Jericho, who's been in there since the very beginning. And after attacking Chris Jericho, Test kicks him in the gut and tosses Jericho out at just under 39 minutes to be the longest survivor in the Rumble this year. But of all people, Test eliminates Jericho.
I don't think it matters who eliminated Jericho. It was Shawn that got all the heat.
Well, what they were going to do was they wanted to save Michaels and Jericho for WrestleMania, but you had the No Way Out pay-per-view. So the plan was they were going to do Jericho against Test as that transitional pay-per-view. However, Test wouldn't make it to that show due to a snowstorm, so it ended up being Jericho and Jeff Hardy. Oh. So Test got the big elimination of Jericho, and then Michaels hit him with a plancha to the floor, and they got separated by the officials.
Big reaction for all this with Michaels and Jericho, so I really think they did a great job setting that up for Mania.
Maven. What about me? What about Maven? Was number 26. Then Goldust came in at 27th, and he was fighting with Shelton and Haas, and then just got eliminated with a clothesline from behind. Wasn't in for very long. A lot of people piling up in the ring at this point. Team Angle was double-teaming and eliminated Booker T. Batista came in 28th, and Test runs at him on the apron, ducks, and Test just falls over top. This was kind of the goofball spot for Test. And then Batista eliminates Rikishi. Brock Lesnar comes out at number 29. And Ross brings up the fact that Lesnar and Shelton Benjamin were former tag partners, reference to an OVW storyline. And then
wasn't he mentioning Seton Hall?
That was Haas went to Seton Hall with his brother.
Whatever school that they went to.
Oh, the University of Minnesota.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were partners there. I guess, you could have been, they were on the same wrestling team. I think Benjamin was his coach, I think. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Lesnar sends Team Angle out together, and then, maybe in the most impressive elimination, F5's Matt Hardy over the top rope to Team Angle on the floor for a big pop. Great-looking elimination. And then number 30th was the return of The Undertaker, who had been out for a few months selling an angle and a beatdown from The Big Show. So everyone's in. Cena gets eliminated by Taker. Then Jamal is knocked out. And then in a playoff of the prior year's Rumble, Maven drop kicks The Undertaker from behind, which eliminated Taker the prior year. This time, Taker no-sells it. Maven's celebrating, thinking he's done it again. And Taker just chokeslams him and dumps out Maven to basically say, we had high hopes for this guy, and over the last year, he failed to meet expectations. Kane and RVD then clothesline A-Train out. Kane then lifts RVD, dumps him onto A-Train on the floor, but they don't really play up any problems with RVD and Kane. It's pretty much RVD saying, you got me, dude. And the final four are Brock Lesnar, The Undertaker, Kane, and Batista.
I like this pairing, these four, because you had two guys from Raw, two guys from SmackDown, and two guys who are almost kind of foils of each other in Kane and Taker, and also Brock and Batista, two muscular, athletic guys that kind of came in at around the same time.
Yeah, I think Batista was kind of, you could tell even by placing him here at the end, they had high hopes for him, mm-hmm. but wouldn't come to fruition for a while. At this point, he was Green Tista.
Okay.
Green Tista.
All right.
Lesnar hits an F5 to Kane, and then Lesnar and Taker go back and forth. They had been teasing these two coming off their feud from the prior year. Lesnar takes this incredibly safe-looking tombstone, and then Taker clotheslines Batista out. So then Taker teases working with Kane, but then turns on Kane and sends him out. Batista then returns to the ring with a chair, gets stopped by Taker, and Taker attacks Batista with the chair, but meanwhile, Taker's back is turned to Lesnar, who comes from behind, dumps Taker over the top for the win at 53 minutes and 48 seconds of the Rumble. But the way this was booked was like, it was almost like their main MO was protecting The Undertaker.
Yeah.
It was like he was distracted by Kane, he didn't see Lesnar coming, and it was like Undertaker... Lawler had to have said over and over, yeah, he gotcha. It was just a misfire on Taker's part rather than Lesnar accomplishing this huge feat.
Yeah, I mean, well, this was Taker's first return back, and I suppose they wanted to keep him strong for that reason, but I felt like you needed a legit win for Brock if he was the guy going to your WrestleMania as a main event. And Taker does the Hogan thing after and congratulates him.
Congratulates him and says, go win the title and give me the shot, referencing the title belt.
Whatever. I suppose they had a lot of people to appease. I thought it was a pretty good Rumble overall.
Yeah, maybe he was mouthing to him, let's face off at Mania in 11 years.
Are we going to do it?
Yeah. We're going to do it. Let's do it.
Are we going to go?
So there you go. That was the 2003 Royal Rumble. I would say if you want to go back and watch this show, watch the last two matches.
Yeah.
Skip the rest. Because if you a pretty great show when you consider the last hour and a half. This was a half great show.
I always like these Rumble pay-per-views because the Rumble takes up an hour. You're really just left with all the important singles matches.
Yeah.
And I much prefer that.
So I'm still going to give this show an 8 out of 10. Mainly for that angle Benoit match. And I thought the first half of the Rumble, where you had a lot of the workers in there, they had a lot of creative Rumble spots, which aren't always the easiest. You had some interesting dynamics with the Raw and SmackDown talent spliced in together. So,
man, I'm so curious to know how Pat Patterson or whoever books these Rumbles. Just, I mean, do they have like flashcards with all these guys' names and then take each one out and one at a time or what? But I'd love to, be a sort of a fly on the wall.
It's the greatest gimmick match they've ever come up with in the WWF and continues to be. It's always a fun match to watch.
Much of that comes down to how it's booked. That's really the beauty of it. I mean, we've seen so many shitty battle royals. Like, TNA's done this type of similar stuff.
Yeah, you're right.
It sucked. Rumble always comes through. But I give this a 7 out of 10.
All right, so there you go. We're now going to head on over to the message board and see what you folks had to say about the 2003 version. And let us start things off with Caesar. What a good show to review now, since the opener is the exact same match we're getting this year. The build-up was the exact same that saw Big Show attack Benoit, and Brock saves him, and Paul Heyman issues a challenge to Brock on SmackDown. They had an all-right opener. Rumble is famous for having the most opposite world title matches. Angle and Benoit was an excellent match that told a really good story, and in the ring was great. However, the world title match was horrendous. It was a 45-second match that was stretched into 18 minutes, so many repetitive spots such as superplexes and 1,000 belly-to-belly suplexes and a DQ finish. Rumble match is pretty entertaining. They had a good roster in 03, more notably on SmackDown. This was the first Rumble after the brand split. Because of this, I always look forward to the Rumble, since it was the rare time that SmackDown and Raw guys would wrestle each other and get unique pairings you won't see every week, such as Rey Jericho, Edge Christian, Eddie RVD, etc. Very good show. 7 belly-to-belly suplexes out of 10.
from Robert, who says, I loved Benoit versus Angle, Dudley's versus Lance Storm and Regal, and more. I just got the DVD. Anyhow, the Rumble match was very good. It was excellent, especially for the fact that the brand extension existed. I felt that it helped give the dimension of the match itself. For example, we see a bunch of guys that either haven't been feuding for a long time or haven't feuded at all. It makes it fresh in our thoughts.
Christian writes, this show is probably remembered for having one of the greatest matches ever and one of the worst. Benoit Angle was simply incredible. Triple H Steiner was the absolute shits. 2003 was most likely Triple H's worst year in terms of in-ring work. I remember he was actually voted the worst wrestler of 03 in Power Slam magazine here in the UK. Most of my thoughts are about the Rumble match itself, and I have to say it was a really good one. Jericho looked fantastic doing the guy who just survived story we get every year, and his near eliminations were awesome. I know there's a stereotype of Samoans having hard heads, but I think we missed another one, and that's they like to throw super kicks. Between Rikishi, Rosie, and Jamal, they must have thrown 15 of the damn things. Overall, if I were to title this Rumble, it would have to be the Big Man Rumble. WWE are really into pushing size at this moment, and I can tell you, you can tell based on the final four. Also, I like to ask you guys a question. They mentioned Kane's record of 11 eliminations during the Rumble, a record that has stood since 2001. I have this feeling that they will break the record this year, and it will be Roman Reigns who does it. Do you think they will push Reigns that hard?
Eliminate more than 11 guys. No, I think that's too much.
If he does, the 12th guy should be Kane that he eliminates.
Oh, that'll be nice. I don't see it.
Jobber from New Jersey says, this was my third Rumble, and I consider it having the best title match ever for a Rumble pay-per-view. Before the unfortunate incident, I watched Benoit versus Angle from the show half a dozen times and haven't since. Burial H versus Slob Steiner was brutal. Triple H and his propensity for having 20 minutes of bullshit like he's Ric Flair was garbage. He never works to the strength of the opponent and totally ruins everything that could have made the match even decent if it was shorter in length. The Rumble was very good, but filled with a lot of guys you knew weren't going to win. Lesnar winning was great, even though him as a top babyface was seriously asinine. The guy couldn't talk his way out of a wet paper bag. No wonder they turned him 5 months later. Overall, a 7 out of 10 show.
All right, from Jinty. I only watched the Rumble match on YouTube and not much background on storylines or news. I made the following notes. HBK going out early was a shock. Good pace to start. Great Nowinski spot. Jericho's face is a mess.
Okay.
Rest of match pretty predictable.
Mike from New Jersey. Benoit versus Angle from this show was one of my favorite matches ever, and they were doing a great job in transitioning Brock Lesnar from a monster heel to a babyface at this time. I'm pretty sure this was near the peak of my hatred for Triple H, and this match with Steiner did him no favors in this regard. I thought the stuff with Jericho and Christian and Michaels at the start of the Rumble match was great too. 8 out of 10.
David Duffenberg. When I first watched this, it was on DVD and it was a blessing. For some reason, my DVD player would freeze up at the start of the Triple H Steiner match. Everything else worked fine, so my DVD player just couldn't handle the pile of shit title match. It wasn't until I bought the complete anthology that I was able to poison my brain with that filth and to think that I had high hopes for Steiner. Rumble was entertaining. Obviously, Brock was the heavy favorite, but obviously isn't always bad. Final Four was interesting, just seeing all the legitimate big men slug it out. Jericho and Shawn opening was rather surprising. At first, I assumed they'd both last until at least all 30 had entered, and wasn't this the end of Nowinski's career? Just some bad timing by Edge, and it looked so painful seeing him land on Nowinski's face. He would wrestle after this, but not for too much longer.
Daryl from Toronto. The Triple H Steiner match was awful. I wasn't a fan of the Earl Hebner holier-than-thou character that is going to do everything he can to not disqualify Triple H, only to DQ him anyway. I enjoyed the Rumble match much more this time around than I did at the time. Maybe it's just looking back and appreciating how good the roster was back then and seeing a mix of future superstars and guys who quickly faded into obscurity. I also learned that Matt Hardy strongly dislikes mustard.
Chris Holt. The Lesnar match wasn't awful. I'm now intrigued to see if the rematch 11 years later will compare. The F5 spot was better for looking awkward. I skipped the Dudley match, likewise the Divas match. World title match. Part of me had hope in 2003 as I was a fan of Steiner's in his earlier WWF run. This match was awful. Just awful. It's the only time Triple H has worked. Okay. But after many suplexes, no one cared. Angle Benoit was a clinic. Rumble itself was decent. On the whole, good show with a complete stinker in the middle. 7 Scott Steiner purple thongs out of 10.
Oh. Finally, from Danny Chestnuts in Boston. Hey, John and Way, I was lucky enough to sit
ringside for this event.
Ooh.
To this day, the Angle-Benoit title match is the finest match I've seen in person. I'll never forget everyone in the garden giving Benoit a standing ovation afterwards. What an excellent match and an even more surreal moment afterward. The rest of the event was average at best, even with the ringside view. Scott Steiner was an embarrassment, and the Rumble match itself was nothing to write home about. I remember thinking how obvious it was that Lesnar would be the eventual winner, yet everyone in the arena seemed surprised anyway. Overall, I took three things away from this event: the Angle-Benoit masterpiece, the stage having a never-ending rainstorm, and Triple H's bright red trunks. 5 Big Papa Pumps out of 10.
Wow. Did you notice those shots they had with the rain?
No.
They would go they had this camera for the entrances where they'd cut to, and it was, rain on top of the lens. It looks so weird. This is very strange. No, it's like someone had some artistic touch here that I don't know if it quite – they never did it again, so maybe that answers the question right there. All right. Thank you, everyone, for your feedback, which you can always leave us at lawradio.proboards.com. Wei is completely sick of talking about this show, and we are going to get on out of here in just a couple of minutes. But next week, Wei, have you had a change of heart? What do you want to review?
We are doing WCW Sin.
Sin. From January of 2001, at a time when they started to rename their pay-per-views like Revenge and Greed. Mm. We're going to tackle Sin.
Revenge, Greed, Sin. Okay. Are those the sins? Wait. Are those the... what are the other...
The seven deadly sins?
Yeah. I guess a sin wouldn't be a sin.
Yeah,
the seven
sin can't be a sin. they were kind of over... They were the umbrella
WCW Sloth?
I almost wish WCW stayed in business just so we could have got the whole run of them in 2001. They cut them off in March.
What else is there? Good WCW Gluttony.
Gluttony. No, yeah. That was kind of the theme of 2000. Right. So. Sin is what we are going to talk about next week. So we're going to watch that show. You can leave your feedback to one of the final WCW pay-per-views. And actually, at a time when things were looking up because they thought Bischoff was going to swoop in and buy this company and save it.
So is this the Sid leg break?
This is the infamous match where Sid, one of the most gruesome injuries in wrestling history, in sports history.
I don't know if I want to watch this.
You don't have to watch that.
I feel like I need a 5-year break between no
pun. How about we preface it with this? For your feedback, we don't need your reaction of how horrendous his leg looks. It was disgusting.
People could talk about it. I'm sure that.
Okay, well, we'll be a little more creative.
The main thing to stand out.
You know what? I'm gonna dig up. I'm gonna dig up that Sid interview we did years later, talking about that leg break and mouth asking, if he really thinks he can come back and headline a WrestleMania, because Sid would shout him down. You don't think I can do it? So we're going to find out. Maybe we can get Sid on again.
Maybe. Yeah, no, you guys can talk about whatever you want, but just, we don't, no need to state too obvious facts, but say whatever you want.
I just want to go back and see WCW at this point in time where cutting costs, and it was still not a happy time in WCW land. So that's what we're going to do next week from January of 2001. Sin! So that's coming up next week. Of course, our usual programs, Review and Impact, is coming up later this week. And then the big one, The Law, this Sunday night, right after the Royal Rumble. We're going to be dedicating the whole 2 hours to your calls, chatting about the Rumble, whatever happens. We'll have the results of The Law's Royal Rumble pool, which we'll find out if Wei is a happy or very sad man on Sunday night after the Rumble. And you can enter into the Review Away Royal Rumble pool right now, tinyurl.com/rumble2014. It's free to enter, tons of categories. We're going to announce what the prize is on Review and Impact this week, and then the results will be announced next week once we've tallied them all up. So that's going to wrap us up. Go on over to liveaudiowrestling.com. Follow at Wei0937. At I am John Pollock, and that is all for Royal Rumble 2003.
What are we going out with?
That's a good question. Well, we came in with Trust Company. Do you want to go out with more Trust Company?
Not really.
Okay. Well,
I don't care.
We heard a John Cena offbeat rap.
Okay.
Do you have maybe some rap that's on beat?
Maybe. Maybe let's pick something from 2003.
Okay.
How about, what was popular back then?
2003 popular songs. Do you want the Billboard Top 100 songs of 2003?
No.
No?
Okay.
How did Aaliyah have a top 10 song in 2003? She died 2 years prior.
Yeah, they're probably one of those posthumous releases. Oh, shit.
You don't want to come out with...
That Outkast album with Hey Ya, that came out...
2003, man.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Chingy, right there. Three Doors Down. Sean Paul, Get Busy.
How about...
Kid Rock featuring Sheryl Crow.
Jay-Z's Black Album came out then.
Wow.
50 Cent.
Rock Get Your Rich Body, Justin Timberlake. Cry Me a River came out in 2003.
My God.
Ja Rule and Ashanti were a powerful force. Monica had a song.
You see, I'd love to talk to somebody who's maybe like 19 right now, and like, do they think of this as old school? Do they think of Get Rich or Die Trying as old school?
Who was Flowetry with a song Say Yes? Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, aren't they like an R&B?
I have no clue. Can we go over Flowetry?
Sure.
I want to hear the song Say Yes.
I think it's a girl.
Oh, maybe that should be Daniel Bryan's theme.
All right.
Flowetry, folks, with a tie-in to today's wrestling.
Okay.
I love it.
Are we sure we can even air all these songs?
No.
Like, is somebody going to go after us for playing all this music we don't have rights to on
a podcast? Yeah, we'll hand over all the money we've made hand over fist for these shows.
Right.
They'll have rights to 10% of nothing.
Okay.
All right, here it is. Flowetry.
Yeah, Flowetry's R&B duo. Marsha Ambrosius on Ambrosius and Natalie Stewart. Smiling style. Wanna know if I can be with you for the night. Alright. Is that alright? Baby. Baby. There is only one for me. You have made that apart. We could take that step to see if this is really gonna be. All you gotta do is say yes. All you gotta do is say yes. Don't deny what you feel. Let me undress you, babe. Open up your mind. Just rest. I'm about to let you know you make me so. All you gotta do is say yes. Don't deny what you feel. Let me undress you, babe. Open up your mind. Just rest. I'm about to let you know you make me so.